some sort of iron rod with a burning stone set into the end of it. They didn't have seraph blades. They hadn't developed them. It doesn't look like they had iron sisters or silent brothers either. They had blacksmiths, and they developed some sort of weapon, something they thought might help them. The word here is Skeptron, but it doesn't mean anything to me. Anyway, the Skeptron wasn't enough. He moved to the next panel, which showed destruction, the Nephilim lying dead, the woman with the iron rod crumpled on the ground, the rod itself cast aside. The demons, they're called Asmodai here, burned away the sun and filled the sky with ash and clouds. They ripped fire from the earth and razed the cities to the ground. They killed everything that moved and breathed air. They drained the seas until everything in the water was dead too. Asmodai, echoed Clary. I've heard that before. It was something Lilith said about Sebastian, before he was born. The child born with this blood in him will exceed in power the greater demons of the abysses between the worlds. He will be more mighty than the Asmodai. Asmodeus is one of the greater demons of the abysses between worlds, said Jace, meeting Clary's gaze. She knew he remembered Lilith's speech as well as she did. He had shared the same vision, shown to them by the angel Lithuriel. Like Abaddon? Simon inquired. He was a greater demon. Far more powerful than that. Asmodeus is a prince of hell. There are 9 of them. The Fati. Shadow hunters cannot hope to defeat them. They can destroy angels in combat. They can remake worlds, said Jace. The Asmodai are Asmodeus's children. Powerful demons. They drained this world dry and then left it for other, weaker demons to scavenge. Alex sounded sick. This isn't the Accords Hall anymore. It's a tomb. A tomb for the life of this world. But is this our world? Isabel's voice rose. Did we go forward in time? If the Queen tricked us... She didn't. At least not about where we are, said Jace. We didn't go forward in time, we went sideways. This is a mirror dimension of our world, a place where history went slightly differently. He hooked his thumbs into his belt and glanced around. A world with no shadow hunters. It's like Planet of the Apes, said Simon, except that was the future. Yeah, well, this could be our future if Sebastian gets what he wants, Jace said. He tapped on the panel of the woman holding up the burning Skeptron and frowned, then pushed hard on the door. It swung open with a shriek of hinges that cut the air like a knife. Clary winced. Jace drew his sword and peered cautiously through the gap in the door. There was a room beyond, filled with a grayish light. He shouldered the door open farther and slipped through the gap, gesturing for the others to wait. Isabel, Alec, Clary and Simon exchanged glances, and without a word spoken, went after him immediately. Alec went first, bow drawn, then Isabel with her whip. Clary with her sword, and Simon, eyes gleaming like a cat's in the dimness. The inside of the Accords Hall was both familiar and unfamiliar. The floor was marble, cracked and broken. In many places, great black blots spread across the stone, the remnants of ancient bloodstains. The roof above, which in their Alicante was glass, was long gone, only shards remaining, like clear knives against the sky. The room itself was empty, save for a statue in the center. The place was filled with sickly yellow-gray light. Jace, standing facing the statue, whirled as they approached. I told you to wait, he snapped at Alec. Don't you ever do anything I tell you to. Technically, you didn't say anything, Clary said. You just gestured. Gesturing counts, Jace said. I gesture very expressively. You're not in charge, Alec said, lowering his bow. Some of the tension had gone out of his posture. There were clearly no demons hiding in the shadows. Nothing blocked their view of the corroded walls, and nothing but the statue remained standing in the room. You don't need to protect us. Isabel rolled her eyes at both of them and stepped closer to the statue, craning her head back. It was the statue of a man in armor. His feet in mail boots rested on a golden plinth. He wore an intricate hauberk of linked stone circlets, decorated with a motif of angel wings across the chest. In his hand he carried an iron replica of a Skeptron, tipped by a circular metal ornament into which a red jewel had been set. Whoever had carved the statue had been skilled. The face was handsome, square-jawed, with a distant, clear gaze. but they had captured more than good looks. There was a certain harshness to the set of his eyes and jaw, a twist to his mouth that spoke of selfishness and cruelty. There were words written on the plinth, and though they were not in English, Clary could read them. Jonathan Shadowhunter, first and last of the Nephilim. First and last, Isabel whispered. This place is a tomb. Alec crouched down. There were more words on the plinth, under Jonathan Shadowhunter's name. He read them out. And he who overcomes, and he who keeps my deeds until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, and I will give him the Morning Star.
What's that supposed to mean? Simon asked.
I think Jonathan Shadowhunter got cocky, said Alec. I think he thought this Skeptron thing would not just save them, but it would let him rule over the world. And I will give him the Morning Star, said Clary. That's from the Bible, our Bible, and Morgenstern means Morning Star. The Morning Star means a lot of things, said Alec. It can mean the brightest star in the sky, or it can mean heavenly fire, or it can mean the fire that fools with angels when they're cast down out of heaven. It's also the name of Lucifer, the Lightbringer, the demon of pride. He straightened up. Either way, it means that thing the statue is holding is a real weapon, said Jace. Like in the door engravings, you said the Skeptron is what they developed here instead of Seraph blades to hold off the demons. Look at the marks on the handle. It's been in battle.
Isabel tapped the pendant around her throat.
And the red stone. It looks like it's made from the same stuff as my necklace.
Jace nodded. I think it is the same stone.
Clary knew what he was going to say next before he said it.
That weapon. I want it.
Well, you can't have it, Alec said. It's attached to the statue.
It's not, Jace pointed. Look, the statue's gripping it, but they're actually two totally separate pieces. They carved the statue and then they put the scepter into its hands. It's supposed to be removable.
I'm not sure that's exactly true, Clary began, but Jace was already putting a foot up onto the plinth, preparing to climb. He had the glint in his eyes she both loved and dreaded, the one that said, do what I want and damn the consequences.
Wait. Simon darted to block Jace from climbing farther. I'm sorry, but does anyone else see what's going on here?
No, Jace drawled.
Why don't you tell us all about it? I mean, we've got nothing but time.
Simon crossed his arms over his chest.
I've been in a lot of campaigns.
Campaigns? Isabel echoed, bewildered.
He means Dungeons and Dragons games, Clary explained.
Games?
Alec echoed in disbelief.
In case you haven't noticed, this is no game.
That's not the point, Simon said. The point is that when you're playing D&D and your group comes across a heap of treasure or a big sparkly gem or a magical golden skull, you should never take it. It's always a trap.
He uncrossed his arms and waved them wildly.
This is a trap.
Jace was silent. He was looking at Simon thoughtfully as if he'd never seen him before, or at least never considered him so closely.
Come here, he said.
Simon moved toward him, his eyebrows raised.
What? Ugh.
Jace had dropped his sword into Simon's hands.
Hold this for me while I climb, Jace said, and leaped up onto the plinth.
Simon's protests were drowned out by the sound of Jace's boots knocking against the stone as he scrambled up the statue, pulling himself up hand over hand. He reached the middle of the statue, where the carved hauberk offered footholds, and braced himself, reaching across the stone to close his hand around the handle of the Skeptron.
It might have been an illusion, but Clary thought she saw the statue's smiling mouth twist into an even crueler grimace. The red stone flared up suddenly. Jace jerked back, but the room was already full of an ear-splitting noise, the terrible combination of a fire alarm and a human scream going on and on and on.
Jace! Clary raced to the statue. He had already dropped from it to the ground, wincing at the awful noise. The light of the red stone was increasing, filling the room with a bloody illumination.
God damn it! Jace shouted over the noise. I hate it when Simon is right.
With a glare, Simon shoved Jace's sword back at him. Jace took it, his gaze darting around warily. Alec had raised his bow again. Isabel stood ready with her whip. Clary drew a dagger from her belt. We'd better get out of here, Alec called. It could be nothing, but... Isabel cried out and clapped her hand to her chest. Her pendant had begun to flash. Slow, steady, bright pulses like a heartbeat. Demons! She cried, just as the sky filled with flying things. And they were things. They had heavy round bodies like huge pale grubs pocked with rows of suckers. They had no faces. Both ends of them terminated in massive pink circular mouths rimmed with shark's teeth. Rows of stubby wings lined their bodies, each wing tipped with a dagger-sharp talon. And there were a lot of them. Even Jace paled. By the angel, run! They ran, but the creatures, despite their girth, were faster. They were landing all around them with ugly, wet sounds. Clary thought wildly that they sounded like giant spitballs falling from the sky. The light pouring from the Skeptron had vanished the moment they'd appeared, and the room was now bathed in the ugly, yellowish glow of the sky. Clary! Jay shouted as one of the creatures heaved itself toward her, its circular mouth open. Ropes of yellow drool hung from it. Thump! An arrow embedded itself in the roof of the demon's mouth. The creature reared back, spitting black blood. Clary saw Alec seize another arrow, fit it, let it fly. Another demon reeled back, and then Isabel was on it, her whip slashing back and forth, slicing it to ribbons. Simon had seized another demon and was holding it, his hands sinking into its fleshy grey body, and Jace plunged his sword into it. The demon collapsed, knocking Simon back to the floor. He landed on his backpack. Clary thought she heard a sound like breaking glass, but a moment later Simon was back up on his feet, Jace steadying him with a hand to the shoulder before they both turned back to the fight. Ice had descended over Clary, the silent coldness of battle. The demon Alec had shot was writhing, trying to spit out the arrow lodged in its mouth. She stepped over to it and plunged her dagger into its body, black blood spraying up from the wound, soaking her gear. The room was full of the rotten garbage stench of demons, laced through with the acid of ichor. She gagged as the demon gave a last spasm and collapsed. Alec was backing up, steadily letting arrow after arrow fly, sending the demons reeling back, wounded. As they struggled, Jace and Isabel fell on them, slashing them to pieces with sword and whip. Clary followed their lead, leaping on another wounded demon, sawing away at the soft band of flesh under its mouth, her hand, coated in oily demon blood, slipping on the hilt of her dagger. The demon collapsed in on itself with a hiss, sending her crashing to the ground. The blade skittered out of her hand, and she threw herself after it, seized it up, and rolled to the side just as another demon lunged with an uncoiling of its powerful body. It hit the space where she'd just been lying and curled itself around, hissing, so that Clary found herself facing two open, gaping mouths. She readied her blade to let it fly, when there was a flash of silver gold, and Isabel's whip came down, slicing the thing in half. It fell apart in two pieces, a jumbled mess of steaming internal organs poured out. Even through the ice of battle, Clary was nearly sick. Demons usually died and vanished before you saw much of their insides. This one was still writhing, even in two pieces, twitching forward and back. Isabel grimaced and raised her whip again, and the twitch turned into a sudden violent jerk as half the monster twisted backward and sank its teeth into Isabel's leg. Izzy screamed, slashing down with the whip, and it released her. She fell back, her leg going out from under her. Clary leaped forward, stabbing at the other half of the demon, plunging her dagger into the creature's back until it crumbled apart under her, and she found herself kneeling in a welter of demon blood, drenched blade in her hand, gasping. There was silence. The ringing alarm had stopped and the demons were gone. They had all been slaughtered, but there was no joy of victory. Isabel was on the ground, her whip curled around her wrist, blood pouring from a crescent-shaped slash in her left leg. She was gasping, her eyelids fluttering. Izzy! Alec dropped his bow and launched himself across the bloody floor at his sister. He fell to his knees, hauling her up onto his lap. He yanked the steely from her belt. Izzy, hold on. Jace, who had gathered up Alec's fallen bow, looked like he was going to throw up or fall. Clary saw with dull surprise that Simon had his hand on Jace's arm, his fingers digging in as if he were holding Jace up. Alec tore at the slashed fabric of Isabel's gear, ripping her trouser leg open to the knee. Clary stifled a cry. Isabel's leg was ribboned. It looked like pictures of shark bites Clary had seen, blood and pulped tissue surrounding deep indents. Alec put his steely to the skin of her knee and drew an Irazi, and then another an inch farther down. His shoulders were shaking, but his hand was steady. Clary wrapped her hand around Jace's and squeezed. His was ice cold. "Izzy," Alec whispered as the Irazis faded and sank into her skin, leaving white remnants behind. Clary remembered Hodge, how they had drawn healing rune after healing rune on him, but his wounds had been too great. The runes had faded and he had bled out and died despite the rune's power. Alec looked up. The shape of his face was awkward, twisted. There was blood on his cheek, Isabel's, Clary thought. "Clary," he said, "maybe if you try..." Simon suddenly stiffened. "We need to get out of here," he said. "I can hear wings. There's going to be more of them." Isabel was no longer gasping. The bleeding from the slash in her leg had slowed, but Clary could see, with a sinking heart, that the wounds were still there, a puffed and angry red. Alec rose, cradling his sister's limp body in his arms, her black hair hanging down like a flag. "Go where?" he said harshly. "If we run, they'll be on us." Jace whirled around. "Clary!" His eyes were full of pleading. Clary's heart broke for him, Jace, who hardly ever pleaded for anything. For Isabel, the bravest of them all. Alec looked from the statue to Jace to the pale face of his unconscious sister. "Someone," he said, his voice cracking, "do something." Clary spun on her heel and ran for the wall. She half flung herself against it, yanking her steely free from her boot and went for the stone. The contact of the instrument's tip with the marble sent a shockwave up her arm, but she pressed on, her fingers vibrating as she drew. Black lines fissured out across the stone, cracking into the shape of a door. The edges of the lines began to shimmer. Behind her, Clary could hear the demons, the bellow of their voices, the flap of taloned wings, their hissing calls rising to shrieks as the door blazed up with light. It was a silvery rectangle, as depthless as water, but not water, framed with fiery runes, a portal. Clary reached out with one hand, touched the surface. Every part of her mind concentrated on visualizing a single place. "Come on!" she screamed, her eyes fixed on it, not moving as Alec, carrying his sister, darted past her and disappeared into it, vanishing utterly. Simon followed him, and then Jace, catching at her free hand as he went. Clary only had a moment to turn and look behind her. A great black wing swept across her vision, a terrifying glimpse of teeth dripping poison, before the storm of the portal took her and whirled her away into chaos. Clary slammed into the ground, hard, bruising her knees. The portal had torn her away from Jace. She rolled to her feet quickly and looked around, breathing hard. What if the portal hadn't worked? What if it had taken them to the wrong place? But the cave roof rose above, familiar and towering, marked with runes. There was the fire pit, the scuff marks on the floor where they had all slept the night before. Jace rising to his feet, Alec's bow falling from his hand, Simon, and Alec on his knees beside Isabel. Any satisfaction Clary felt at her success with the portal popped like a balloon. Isabel lay still and drained-looking, gasping shallow breaths. Jace dropped down beside Alec and touched Isabel's hair gently. Clary felt Simon clasp her wrist. His voice was ragged. "If you can do anything." She moved forward as if in a dream and knelt down on the other side of Isabel, opposite Jace, steely slipping in her bloody fingers. She put the tip to Izzy's wrist, remembering what she had done outside the Adamant Citadel, how she had poured herself into healing Jace. "Heal, heal, heal," she prayed. And finally the steely jerked to life, and the black lines began to spiral sluggishly across Izzy's forearm. Izzy moaned and jerked in Alec's arms. He had his head down, his face buried against his sister's hair. "Izzy, please," he whispered. "Not after Max. Izzy, please stay with me." Isabel gasped, her eyelids fluttering. She arched up and then sank back as the Irazi vanished from her skin. A dull pulse of blood oozed sluggishly from the wound in her leg. The blood looked tinted black.
Clary's hand tightened so hard on her steely, she felt it bend in her hand.
"I can't do it," she whispered. "I can't make one strong enough."
"It's not you, it's the poison," Jay said. "Demon poison in her blood. Sometimes runes can't help."
"Try again," Alex said to Clary. His eyes were dry, but with a terrible brightness. "With the Orazi, or with a new rune, you can create a rune."
Clary's mouth was dry. Never had she wanted to create a rune more, but the steely no longer felt like an extension of her arm, it felt like a dead thing in her hand. She had never felt more helpless. Isabel was taking rasping breaths.
"Something has to help,"
Simon shouted suddenly, his voice echoing off the walls.
"You're shadow hunters, you fight demons all the time, you have to be able to do something."
"And we die all the time," Jay shouted back at him, and then suddenly crumpled over Isabel's body, doubling up as if he'd been punched in the stomach.
"Isabel, God, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry."
"Move," Simon said, and suddenly he was on his knees next to Isabel, all of them grouped around her, and Clary was reminded of the horrible tableau in the Accords Hall when the Lightwoods had gathered around Max's dead body. And it couldn't be happening again, it couldn't.
"Leave her alone," Alex snarled. "You're not her family, vampire."
"No," Simon said, "I'm not."
And his fangs snapped out sharp and white.
Clary sucked in her breath as Simon raised his own wrist to his mouth and tore at it, slicing open the veins, and blood ran in rivulets down his arm. Jace's eyes widened. He stood up and backed away. His hands were in fists, but he didn't move to stop Simon, who held his wrist over the gash in Isabel's leg and let his blood run down his fingers, spattering onto her, covering her wound.
"What are you doing?"
Alec ground up between his teeth, but Jace flung up a hand, his eyes on Simon.
"Let him," Jace said, almost in a whisper. "It can work, I've heard of it working."
Isabel, still unconscious, arched back into her brother's arms. Her leg was twitching. The heel of her boot dug into the ground as her ribbon skin began to knit itself back together. Simon's blood poured in a steady stream, covering the injury, but even beneath the blood, Clary could see new pink skin was covering the torn mess of flesh. Isabel's eyes opened. They were wide and dark. Her lips had been almost white, but color was starting to come back into them. She stared at Simon uncomprehendingly, and then down at her leg. The skin that had been torn and shredded looked clean and pale, only a faint half-moon of neatly spaced white scars left to show where the demon's teeth had gone in. Simon's blood was still dripping slowly from his fingers, though the wound in his wrist had mostly healed. He looked pale, Clary realized anxiously, much paler than usual, and his veins were standing out blackly against his skin. He lifted his wrist to his mouth, his teeth bared.
"Simon, no!"
Isabel said, struggling to sit up against Alec, who was staring down at her with shocked blue eyes. Clary caught Simon's wrist.
"It's all right," she said.
Blood stained his sleeve, his shirt, the corners of his mouth. His skin was cold under her touch, his wrist pulseless.
"It's okay, Isabel's okay," she said, and drew Simon to his feet.
"Let's give them a second," she said softly, and led him away to where he could lean against her by the wall. Jason and Alec were bending over Isabel, their voices low and murmuring. Clary held Simon by the wrist as he slumped back against the stone, his eyes fluttering shut in exhaustion.
19. Into the Silent Land. The undarkened woman had pale skin and long coppery hair. It might have been pretty once, but now was tangled with dirt and twigs. She didn't appear to care, just placed the plates of food, gruel, soupy, and gray-looking, for Magnus and Luke, and a bottle of blood for Raphael, on the floor, and turned away from the prisoners. Neither Luke nor Magnus moved toward their food. Magnus felt too sick to have much of an appetite. Besides, he was vaguely suspicious that Sebastian had poisoned the gruel, or drugged it, or both. Raphael, though, seized up the bottle and drank from it hungrily, swallowing until blood ran out of the corners of his mouth.
Now, Raphael, said a voice from the shadows, and Sebastian Morgenstern appeared in the open doorway.
The undarkened woman bowed her head and hurried out past him, shutting the door behind her.
He really looked astonishingly like his father had at his age, Magnus thought. Those odd black eyes, entirely black, without a hint of brown or hazel. The sort of feature that was beautiful because it was unusual. The same fanatic twitch to his smile. Jace had never had that. He had recklessness, and the anarchic joy of imagined self-annihilation, but he was not a zealot. Which, Magnus thought, was precisely why Valentine had sent him away. To crush your opposition, you need a hammer, and Jace was a much more delicate weapon than that. "Where's Jocelyn?" It was Luke, of course, his voice a low growl, his hands and fists at his sides. Magnus wondered what it was like for Luke to look at Sebastian, whether the resemblance to Valentine, who had once been his parabatai, was painful, or whether that loss had faded long ago. "Where is she?" Sebastian laughed, and that was something that was different about him. Valentine had never been a man who laughed easily. Jace's sarcastic humor seemed to have been born into his blood, a distinctly Herondale trait. "She's fine," he said. "Just fine. By which I mean she's still alive. Which is the best you can hope for, really."
"I want to see her," Luke said.
Sebastian said, as if considering it.
"No, I don't see the advantage in it to me."
"She's your mother," said Luke. "You could be kind to her."
"It's none of your business, dog."
For the first time, there was a shadow of youth in Sebastian's voice, an edge of petulance.
"You, with your hands all over my mother, making Clary believe you're her family."
"I'm more her family than you are," said Luke. And Magnus shot him a warning look as Sebastian whitened, his fingers twitching toward his belt, where the hilt of the Morgenstern sword was visible.
"Don't," Magnus said in a low voice, and then louder. "You know if you touch Luke, Clary will hate you. Jocelyn, too."
Sebastian drew his hand away from his sword with a visible effort.
"I said I never intended to harm her."
"No, just hold her hostage," Magnus said. "You want something. Something from the Clave or something from Clary and Jace. I'd guess the latter. The Clave has never interested you much. But you do care what your sister thinks. She and I are very close, by the way," he added.
"You're not that close."
Sebastian's tone was withering. "I'm hardly going to spare the life of everyone she's ever met. I'm not that crazy." "You seem very crazy," said Raphael, who had been silent up until that point.
"Raphael,"
Magnus said in a warning tone. But Sebastian didn't seem angry. He was regarding Raphael with a considering look.
"Raphael Santiago," he said. "Leader of the New York clan. Or aren't you?"
"No. It was Camille who held that position, and now the little mad girl. That must be quite frustrating for you. It really seems to me that the Shadow Hunters of Manhattan ought to have stepped in before now. Neither Camille nor poor Maureen Brown were fit to be leaders. They broke the accords. They cared nothing for the law. But you do. It seems to me that of all the downworld races, the vampires have been most ill-treated by Shadow Hunters. One only needs to look at your situation."
"Raphael,"
Magnus said again, and tried to lean forward to catch the vampire's eye, but Magnus's chains pulled tight, rattling. He winced at the pain in his wrists. Raphael was sitting back on his heels, his cheeks flushed from his recent feeding. His hair was tousled. He looked as young as he had when Magnus had first met him.
"I do not see why you are telling me this," he said.
"You can't say I've mistreated you more than your vampire leaders," said Sebastian.
"I fed you. I haven't put you in a cage. You know I'll win. You all know it. And on that day, I'll be happy to make sure you, Raphael, rule all the vampires in New York. In fact, all the vampires in North America. You're welcome to them. All I need is for you to bring the other knight's children to my side. The fair folk have already joined with me. The court always picks the winning side. Shouldn't you?"
Raphael rose to his feet. There was blood on his hands.
He frowned down at them. Raphael was nothing if not fastidious.